Okay, hello again, friends, and welcome back to our author studio that we started a couple of weeks ago, and we are now in the middle of accepting your paper to an international journal that you have always wished to publish for. So we went through last time this really long process, which might take time before you really get your paper ready. And even when it's ready, it will still take some time here in the proofing phase when it goes to the publisher. Sometimes in this stage, you might still have to do a lot of things to your article. And like sometimes you might even change the refereeing style or all kind of annoying things that might take days to do, really. And something just what you should do really carefully when you get to your last proofs, read them really carefully. Because there might be some mistakes that are done during the proofing time. You might have done yourself some changes in some of the revisions that you have skipped to notice. So that there are no annoying mistakes in the end. It's not very common, but every now and then you might see in some of the journals short notices that excuse that there was a problem in my table in that and that article published earlier in this journal and so forth. But it's not really a nice thing to correct things afterwards. If there are then mistakes, then there is mistakes and you can't really do anything about it. But anyhow, this you might have to do these revisions a number of times, 1, 2, 3 times, even 4 times in sometimes. And even after several revisions, you might end up to the beginning so that the paper is rejected. Something tells about this length of these processes. We are just last night and early this morning we were finishing a paper that we did the analysis in 2013. Because I can find it from one table that it was dated to 2013. So that is 5 years ago. And the paper was sent to a first journal probably in spring 2014, I guess. And that process was extremely long. It took about almost 2 years in that journal before they came to a conclusion to reject our paper, which is really nice. Then we made a number of revisions to the paper because we knew that if we are going to go back in the loop here to select the journal. We selected the journal from a little bit from other discipline even. So we have to more or less totally revise the article, and it took again 1 year roughly. Then we sent it to the journal, and first referee round it took a really, really long time. It took about 1 year when we finally got the decision that this has to be that major revisions are needed. So we started once again the whole process, then got the decision revise and resubmit, and here we are. Now it is 2018. Usually, as a historian, I would not be so annoyed about it. History is so long back in time, so it doesn't really matter if you publish it today or in 5 years or so forth. But unfortunately, the topic of this paper is quite a contemporary one. The topic is the decline of Nokia, using historians' methods to explain why Nokia failed in the recent past. And we all know that after 2013, there has been a number of books that have been published about the issue, some of you might have noticed what was discussed in Helsingin Sanomat during the last weekend about the issue. Again, some thing that we already wrote 2013 after doing a massive amount of interviews among the top managers of the company and so forth. So now we have a serious problem because our paper is totally outdated. And we have to still try to make it valuable for the journal, and still even if it's the really recent history, we still have to try to put it in the format that it's also valuable from the historian perspective. So, but that's just the one example. Luckily, we have time, so I don't have to do my PhD anymore. So I can wait. So it's no harm done, really, and we could do that even quicker if we just select the journal in the first phase. Fine, but again, so now you have the decision, and how you can get conditional acceptance or even accepted as is, and what I think there are two things that are especially important when you are writing a journal article, book, whatever, that you would like to be published and get it published in high-ranked journal, whether it's international or national. And one thing is relevance. Your article has to have relevance in terms of the discussion that is discussed in that particle journal. And you have to link your research to relevant discussion. This is kind of obvious, but as an editor, this is something that I miss from all articles that we get, but roughly from half of all the articles, this kind of a relevant discussion is missing. So what this article is actually about? And there are many of you who are doing your research of some particular country, whether that will be Finland or Turkey or Russia or whatever. In 1990s, when I was doing one of my first articles, one of the Finnish editors of one journal suggested that, okay, you shouldn't refer to any Finnish literature, any Finnish research, because nobody can read it anyway. So just skip it. And that's a mistake. You can't say like that. That's unethical. You have to refer to a relevant discussion, also to a domestic discussion, if it's relevant. So that's part of the relevance. Last week, Laura said something that these literature reviews are not important in ethnology and anthropology. That might be true in sense that they don't need a separate section in an article about what is the relevant discussion. But nevertheless, you have to have this linkage to a previous discussion anyway, whether it's in a separate section or whether it is somehow embedded to the very beginning of the article or whatever. So, but anyhow, this is really important, and today it is really getting more important as everything is really available. This is something that we discussed last week. And here you have also a lot of possibilities to go wrong if you put some different theories to discuss with each others, even though these theories don't really discuss with each others. When you have a topic that is somewhere in between different disciplines, then you have to be extremely careful that you know very core of both of these disciplines or a number of those disciplines. So then you have to be extremely careful there. Actually, coming back to our Nokia case, which we are now probably submitting tomorrow or something again to get another journal. Now it's the same journal. Probably one reason that we got really one really negative referee. We got two referee reports. The other one was more or less willing to give conditional acceptance, and the other one was really critical. And we found out that we had missed one specific previous research that is not about Nokia, but it's really relevant from our research point of view. And most probably the author of that article was the other referee. Most probably you can see from the text. Usually when you try to guess who is your referee, you probably get it wrong. That is something that I, time and again, people who are writing articles and then they get referee reports and then they say that this particular referee is so annoying because he or she doesn't like me. I know who this referee is. And usually people get it wrong. It's very difficult actually to guess who is your referee. But for referee, it's no problem to guessing who is the author. It's more like the referee is not doing his or her job well if he or she doesn't know who is the author, because there is always traces in conferences or websites or whatever where you can find who is the author of this or that article. So that makes the double-blind system a little bit of a problematic, but I will come back to that one in a minute. So anyway, be relevant, be analytical. This is also something that we discussed last time. Journal article is not a book in a mini format. It's more like one section of book, if even that. So you have to focus there. Be clear with language, especially with key concepts. And this actually is more relates to this one. They are somehow missed here. But anyway, article is short. You have one research question per article. This is something that has actually changed now or only during the past 5-6 years or so. Again, something that we discussed already last week is that today journals do take even longer articles in because they are mostly published in online format. And this is something that you should really think. Who is your audience? You can even imagine that one researcher or one person, some really famous international scholar or some Nobel Prize winner, you are writing this article to him, that this person is your audience. What he or she would like to hear from your research. Or more broadly, what kind of a research group or more broad field is that you is your audience. You can't write your paper to everybody. These are not newspaper articles. So these are not something that millions and millions of people will read. Your audience is focused. They are really experts on what they are doing, because this is a serious business, this research business, isn't it? So you should concentrate to that audience. Nothing else. You are not doing that to your father or mother. Your mother and father might be the most famous experts in the field, but most probably they are not. But if they are, then you can write that to your mother. But nevertheless, that's an important. Besides relevance, there is also another issue that I think is is important. That is question, so what? When you are writing your article, ask yourself time and again, so what? Please don't be too critical towards yourself. If you kind of go too far with a so what question, then you can't write anything really. But this is what I mean here. That papers should not be like this is especially important for historians. That this is not something antiquarian interest of some specific case. Yeah, you can write a case study, but you can tell a lot about lot with your case study, something more more in an abstract level. The article should have some meaning outside of its focus. Otherwise, it will be rejected. And it should have some kind of a conclusions, significant new relationships, whatever. If it doesn't have it, then it will be rejected. And then you can write about the Finnish history. When you can show that this is something more, that it tells something more than only about this one country and its history, for example. So therefore, even details can be really valuable. And that means that then the so what question is answered to one way or another. You can conceptualize your case studies. Then it works well. Welcome. Actually, Lukos. It's locked. The answer to this so what question usually is the linkage to existing literature, clearly commenting on how material is used, how your analysis can amplify, how it can modify, how it can reformulate, how it renews what's already known. Very seldom we have something that is totally, totally new. And if we have, the journals will be really, really, really looking careful that whether this is something that we are even going to publish, because there are always some previous studies that you can link your research to. And again, if you are doing your study, having case in one particular country, whether that be in linguistics or communication or sociology or history, you can do it. You have to link it to existing domestic literature, but you have to link it also to a more conceptual, more theoretical, more abstract, international level literature in one way or another. And that's also that answers to the so what question. But as said, this is also really a dangerous question, because we tend to be overcritical on what we are doing. And when you are really critical on what you are doing, you might end up of asking yourself, so what? This is rubbish. This doesn't tell anything. I've just put it away and do something else. So you wouldn't be here if your research is not good enough. So the very thing that you've been selected to be a doctoral student in our faculty means that you have already answered to so what question in substance level. So your study is okay. Now you have to just prove to audience, prove to editors, prove to referees that it's okay as well. And that means so what. So relevance and so what, these are what I have, from my experience, are the most important ones, and there are also a lot of other issues as well. So now we have concentrated more from the author's perspective, author's challenges. We will come back to these as well in later on when we look a little bit about the referee processes and so forth. But believe me, also editors do have a lot of challenges in doing their job. Editors in most of the journals, at least in social sciences and humanities, are doing that on free willing, on free time. We are not getting paid on editing journals. In some really fancy big journal, you might get some compensation. So we are doing this purely because of the interest of science and research, and we would like to develop the discipline. And editors usually are also really committed on what they are doing. Of course, it looks really nice in your CV that you have been an editor, but that's not really the issue, I would say, for the most of the people. So, what do the editors then do? We have a lot of challenges for editing the journals. The first issue is actually to get the articles. Although we have a steady inflow of articles in most of the good journals, so we can reject at least half of them, and if we are editing Nature, we can then reject 99% of the papers that come in. So we reject a lot, but still the question is how we can get excellent articles, how we can get the best ones to our journal. So there is a kind of a competition going there, even though we are ourselves publishing in other journals at the same time. So we really would like you to write articles to us. We are waiting for those. All the editors are waiting for good articles, good book reviews, and we are also waiting for really good peer review assessments so that getting good referees is actually today one of the most challenging tasks. Probably I told you last week that we had one case that in the end I end up to asking 17 different persons to make a peer review on one article, which was really, really, really annoying. And so the journals are competing, and we know that if you are a little bit lower level, D level, doesn't mean that the journal is bad at all. It doesn't mean that. It might be regional journals, or for one reason or another, they are not cited as much as some other journal, or they don't have as good possibilities of spreading the journal through the internet or online systems. So we know that there are a lot of papers that were first submitted to some really big A-level journal, and then it was rejected in there, and then it will end up to submitted to some other journal. Editors have a challenge of focusing the journals. A little bit of a similar thing as with the articles, so that we have a good number of articles published, and they are also in the scope of the journal. Online publication and open access is one of the challenges, or has been, but not anymore. I think it's one of the most positive innovations in science and research. As I told you last week, so this is important, but still publishers play a role. It's about the division of labor. It's about that we really need the publishers to publish the journals, even though the journals are still mostly owned by the research communities in one way or another. There might be associations, there might be universities who are in the end the owners of the journals. And then we have a challenge of the owners and publishers. Owners might be, as I said, scientific communities, scientific societies, universities. Then we have publishers, big publishing houses, who make the publishing and gets the profits out, and then pay royalties to the owners, and might give some compensations to editors to pay for example, language correction and this kind of thing. And there has been a lot of discussion, I don't know if I can't remember if I discussed this last week, about that should we go to the totally open access so that there will not be any more publishers, which I think is a nice idea, but it's really unrealistic. Because we need these publishers. They have the know-how, how to publish things. They do all kinds of things that editors actually can't do. We do not have time to do that. No one has time to do that. We need those publishers to and their networks to spread the journals in the first place, both online and also in paper format. And as said, there are hardly any of the top journals that are really established by publishers. They are established by scientific communities who have then sold the rights of publishing to the publishing houses because they need help. They can't do it themselves anymore. So this is really a question of a division of labor. So then we have even more tricky problems of IPR issues, how to protect the author, how to ensure the novelty of the research, plagiarism things, publishers' rights, and so forth. So these are issues that all editors have to be aware of. And then we come to these questions like we had last week on whether if I have published this thing in Finnish and then I would like to publish it in English as well, how we can deal that. We had a really good discussion last week on possibilities to do that. Then we have also the problem of, okay, I have this paper, it has been in a conference, so it's also on a conference site, and now it's going to the the journal. I have not really checked the latest legislation on the issue, so I might be a little bit outdated here. Because this was a question roughly about 10 years ago when I was editing another journal at the time. Namely, that what is actually the copyright of the publisher? And what is the copyright of the author? Author has the copyright to his or her text. According to EU legislation, according to UK legislation, and according to US legislation, which are the ones that actually really count when we are publishing internationally. You have the rights to your text, not the publisher. Publisher has the right to the structure. So you can't distribute, for example, in Facebook, in the your text in the really similar format without permission from the publisher. But as far as I know, you can of course deliver the content in one way or another. But again, there you have to be really careful. And nowadays, our university open science services center, that is the library, has really good knowledge how to deal with this parallel publishing of text and so forth. So you have to contact them, and they will know how different publishers think about of these publishing texts in different formats. And do note also that it's also publishers' best interest that the author's rights are well ensured. And usually we editors, we don't have to really worry too much about these issues. Rather, we are worried if some referee says in the report that, okay, I have seen this text before, it has been published before somewhere, and then we are really in the problems with the text, and we are most probably just have to reject it right away. Then there are sometimes in the texts there are a little bit of annoying sentences about other researchers. There might be a cases that you don't like some research, but you don't have to go to personal details about that. Usually this is really rare, but I have seen this. So you can say that also in a more beautiful way. But even more problematic are some of the referee reports that are really tough stuff. Like this one that suggested that this is so sad, bad stuff that even the copies of the text should be burned. Actually, according to European law and also UK law, editors don't have to send the referee reports as whole to authors. It's very rare that that happens. But if you are a clever editor and you have something really personal in the review report, then it might be a better idea not to send the whole text to author, because that might actually end up to a legal case. And then even the editor and the journal will be in a bit of a problematic situation. Yeah, so these are just the something. And then we have also this very Finnish problem that Finns tend to be we have a little bit of a problem of taking criticism. So in 99% of cases, referees are just trying to help you. They are not trying to put you down as a human being. They're just trying to get a better research out of the journal. And if your article is not that, then it will then they will suggest of rejecting that particle paper. Okay, let's go on. So what is peer review? So how many of you have seen referee reports? Oh, quite many of you.
I have a question to your previous slide, please.
Yes.
There is a point that you were just mentioning that one must not have the, you know, a right to criticize someone personally. But I have read the researchers and the scholars of high popularity. They actually, you know, take the names and, you know, condemn the theories because of the arguments and with the evidences or with the logics. So how do you define that? And how do we use the same? Like, I was reading one of the different or very separate things. Mm-hmm. It was about language rights. So mm-hmm. Skutulup Kangas mm-hmm. is a very famous name from Finland. Mm-hmm. And she was actually criticizing the Levy's expression mm-hmm. of idea on language rights, where she does not agree to the idea of the other researcher who was living in another university. So they both have a different parameters of contending the thought and theory.
Yes.
So if I have to agree on, or if I'm using both the theories which they have an argument, how do you say that I need to cater this into my studies?
Yeah, I think that's a different issue. Then you have evidence. Of course, you discuss in articles with other researchers. You say that what this and that researcher said previously it doesn't hold according to my studies and so forth. So of course there is also criticism. There is always discussion, but it has to be evidence based. But you can't say there that that researcher is a lousy human being because he's from that country. That is something you can't say there. But there has been even that kind of papers I haven't seen. So because you know there are tensions between different countries and so forth, so there might be this kind of a culturally oriented, not that clearly, but you might end up... So that's what I mean. Of course, you have to have criticism. You have to show that that the very the whole research setting, for example, of the other researchers is wrong because he or she has done some mistakes or doesn't understand how it should be done. But even then, you shouldn't go to a kind of accusing the previous researcher in kind of a personal way. There you have to be, because these are still, they are published texts. So there are always a possibility that somebody would take you to the court and say that, okay, you are, it doesn't happen. In Taylor & Francis, that is the largest publishing house in the world, or was at least 10 years ago, they had I don't know how many thousands and thousands of articles they published a year, and they had one or two court cases in 1 year because of these. So these are really rare. They don't happen. But it's still possible. Okay. So you know the referee report. What is the, what kind of experiences do you have from the referee reports? Microphone to you.
Thanks. Actually, now I'm reviewing a paper for international journal, and this is a second round of review.
A little bit louder.
This is a second round of review. So I gave a comments, and there was another reviewer who gave a comments. Actually, we advised to make a minor revision on the paper, and my main advice was to make a language check of the paper because it's a paper for international journal. And I'm not a native speaker. And I have a question. Should I take a personal responsibility for those authors who didn't take into account my advice seriously? I mean, they didn't do this check, language check.
Because I can see that they have done that.
Okay.
But did they wrote in the response letter that they have done?
There was no response letter. There okay. was a new just like submission.
Okay.
And they added several parts of paper explaining mm-hmm. some woke places in their argument. But I can see that they didn't do language checking.
Yeah.
And I'm not a native speaker. I'm not able to advise them how to do this.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't. You should.
So what should I do? Should I just write a personal letter, short letter to the editor, or to express it freely?
I would suggest that you also put into the referee report that I mentioned in my previous report that you should do the language check, and as far as I know, you haven't done that. Why?
Oh, okay. Is it critical?
Yeah.
Isn't it too critical?
No, it's not too critical because I think that's really annoying as a referee if you use your energy, you use your time, free willing, of helping people, and then they don't even take that help and they don't even respond. This might be also a failure from the journal that they don't deliver to the response letter to you. So they might say that okay, we are native speakers. We don't want to do the language check. Yeah.
But there are varieties of research journals. They do avoid. I mean, they don't even check properly that what are the grammatical yeah. errors, spelling errors. Because I myself noticed and wrote under the review part as well.
Yeah.
So this is very common. And as being a researcher, since we are working with authenticity, mm-hmm. relevance, and legalities mm-hmm. into our mind when we are writing, so those points should be incorporated when you are actually talking or writing it to the editor or to the reviewer of the journal. Mm-hmm. So that your point is really strong. It is another war. It's actually, fighting a legal war with the editor, that you are strong enough into your evidences, into your references, yeah. into your points. Now it's his turn to do it properly.
Yes, yeah, that's true. And also, you don't have to change everything in accordance with what the reviewer says, but you have to have an answer why you have or why you haven't do that. And that's the critical point. But if you have noticed that there's a serious problem with the language, then certainly they should do something about it. And that's also something that the editors should notice as well. Any other comments from the review reports? Does anyone want to open to the community?
There is no room for the letter to answer why.
In the journal's platform.
Yes.
Okay, that's strange if there is not. But there should be some ways. You have to have some kind of a letter to editor at least. That's really strange. if they are, or then you should send an email to editor at least. To show and point out that how fascinated you are to send this paper again and how you have developed it in accordance to the instructions by the referees. That I would do like that, because of course there are many kinds of journals that don't have necessarily the best practices.
Thank you. I sent an article some time ago to a journal, and they reviewed it, and they told me that I have to give the article to a native English reader.
Okay.
And I didn't understand actually what it meant. Is it I have to, because I wrote from Africa.
Yes.
And they are telling me to give it to an English native reader.
Yeah.
Okay. How am I going to get access to an English native reader?
Yeah. What that means, that you should have checked by a native speaker, means that somebody who is a native speaker in English will do the language correction to you. So, and that's yet another problem. Now you should contact your supervisor and ask whether your supervisor knows these people who are doing this on profession. We have a lot of people who are doing that on the on contract, or so that they do it. It's rather it's not that costly. There are even internet-based systems that you can use that are not. They are quite okay, but not necessarily very good. Then our language center also is something that you can find help. That is a little bit slow and quite expensive, but they can help. Because usually it's this is a native speaker question. It's actually very cool that came out, because that's also really a big problem. As last week we discussed, there was no one here who is native speaker. And that's probably held even today. So it's very critical that you have someone to check your language, who is native speaker, and beyond. It's no good that you send it to anyone who is a native speaker. You should send somebody who is professional, who has done that before, who knows what science language is about, and even more, that person should have some kind of understanding on your subject matter. And in time, the best possible situation would be something that you have some person that you can trust, who is quick, who knows your mistakes, who knows kind of your way of doing things. And then kind of it kind of creates a relationship between you and the language instructor, I would say. I have been really blessed to have had several really good proofreaders or these native speakers, but then two persons in special. I have never met neither of these two persons. Never. With the first one, we made number of books together that he always checked my language and kind of instructed me to the way to go and so forth. Then he retired, and now I have been using another one for several years. She's really quick. Like yesterday I was writing an editorial to the journal and in a train, and I sent it over to her that, okay, here is the editorial, we really need it by Friday. And this morning when I woke up at 5:30, I sent the paper off at 9 o'clock in the evening. It was there in my email. She had checked it in the night. Don't know where. So these are really, really critical. But your supervisors, they knew people who can do these things, who are good at doing things. And then you get rid of these kind of annoying things that you haven't done the language check. In our disciplines, in humanities and social sciences, the language still matters. And in natural sciences, it also matters, but not necessarily that much, because you can always put an equation there. and maths don't need language that much. But still, it is a critical problem. It's very good that you both, or you three, or all took this up, because it's something that I haven't really put it in my slides. And it's also something that we should seriously discuss in university, how to make this also in a kind of a professional way here in the university. You can get your text translated and language checked freely in this university if those texts are administrative texts. So if you're in administration, everything is okay. Somebody will do that. And they will do it annoyingly wrong. I'm totally disappointed on those translations of our administrative paper. Don't tell. Okay, this goes to the internet, so I don't mind. Because, you know, we have opening of these doctoral student positions at the moment, and the text was translated wrongly, and I never saw the English version of the announcement. And there are such mistakes that I get every day at least 5 emails from all around the world asking for explanations. Because somebody did a mistake in one word. Okay. Okay, I put my smile back on. That is just a little bit of annoying. So what is peer review? It's a short, not necessary. If it's good, it's not short. Analysis about the quality of the manuscript. And the goal is, of course, to get objective assessment. And it shouldn't be subjective, at least in theory. And as I said, the very idea of a referee report is to help author and help the scientific community, help the research community. And as I said, you won't get your research published right away. So in the really top-ranked journals, it's about 5 to 10% of the papers that are published. And there are a number of phases of selection. This is something that we already discussed last week, so I will not go here into detail. So anyway, it takes time, this whole process. And the referee report, a referee process, should be a double blind. So that means that the referee doesn't know who you are and you don't know who the referee is. But in practice, there are usually ways for referees to know, in most cases, who the author is. Not necessarily always, but at least guess who the person is. And as I said, usually the author doesn't know who the referee is. In my very first referee report that I get back in 97, I'm pretty sure who the other referee is. Actually, I'm pretty sure for the both referees. I'm not totally sure who they are, but I'm pretty sure. The other one was Finn. That could be seen from the text because the person used a very Finnish type of English. That is, it definitely was a Finnish. And the other one was Charles Knik-Hahle. Timo might know, a famous economic historian. I knew that because the referee suggested 10 papers that I should read, and they were all written by Charles Knik-Hahle. So that's. That's probably. But then the Finnish referee, why I know who that person was, is the reason for that is that back in 97, computers were not so developed as they are today. Okay? So if people print out their papers, the selection of fonts and so forth, they were not so plentiful of differences or systems or issues you can do about it, and so that meant that usually people, if they have a certain type of a computer, they print out certain type of a text, like a text format. And that time we didn't get the referee reports through the internet, but we could get them as a paper copies. And this person happened to be here in our department in one seminar and giving. His paper, using the same font in the same style. So I'm pretty sure that who that person was. But again, I probably used too much time of just guessing who the persons are. But usually if the referee is suggesting that, okay, you should refer Jari Ojala this and that, then it's either me or some of my student who is trying to promote my research, as they usually do, don't they? So, I don't know. Anyway, it should be a double-blinded. And then it's the number of referees is 2 to 5. How many of you have had, in your experience, 2? 3? Yeah. 3 is, I think, it would be better to have 3, also from the editor's perspective, because very annoying situation for editor is that if you have 2 referees, one is saying that this extremely good paper, it should be published as it is, or with very, very minor revisions to done. All the other referees says that this is so bad paper, it should be rejected immediately. And then you are really in a tough position of having totally 2 really extreme referees. And that actually happens quite often. Even usually the referees are more or less going to the same direction. Then we had this fancy problem of second referee. If you have 3 or more referees, then you have the second referee, which might be first or third, who is the critical one. And then you have a couple of better referees, but then you are more safe. But nevertheless, for editors, it's a bit of annoying if you go only with 2. Sometimes the editors might even go with 1 in very specific cases when you have such a specific topic that there actually is not so many people available who can do this referee from that journal's perspective. That's really, really, really rare. So the referee reports, they are for editors and editorial team, and they are for authors, and as I said, you don't necessarily get the whole report nowadays, you usually get. And they are confidential, so that the editors are not allowed to give these reports to anyone else but to the author. And we don't, because there's no sense of sending them over the various places. And also editors should be a kind of analytical. They have to have evidence, the evidence base, they provide reasons and so forth. And they are most importantly, they are confidential. And in the end, it's the editor who makes the decisions, whether to send the paper to referees in the first place. So the referees don't decide whether paper is published or not. This is something that is, I would say that sometimes kind of forgotten. It's always the editors who make the decisions. Even though the paper gets really bad reviews, the editors might end up accepting the paper because of something like that. This will really boost our research in this topic if we publish this paper, even though it has the challenges. But then you have to, of course, do a lot of revisions, most probably. So these are also the issues that I showed last time in these figures, so we don't have to go there in the more in the detail there. So reviewers are usually looking at that the text is research-based, on content, structure, subject matter. The topic is relevant, so it's the relevance also there. Also, so what questions is there? The general validity of the theoretical approach and relevance of the methods and data. Structure, arguments, flaws in the arguments, approach and data. All these issues that are obvious. And again, if you have some really country-oriented case, if the editors are doing their work well, they probably pick 1 or 2 referees from that particular country who knows the subject matter, then they took 1 or 2 referees from somewhere else who can kind of position themselves of looking at the article from outside, from outsiders' perspective on whether this case is valuable also for us who are not living in that country. But whatever happens, do not get depressed if you are rejected. This is something that I told you time again last time, and I will continue that. So these are the things that usually gets to the rejection. You have a poorly planned study design to start with. You have a lack in detail on explaining your methods, which is really problematic, especially for historians who tend to think that we don't have to tell about our methods, but we really do have to tell it, especially if we are not, if we are publishing somewhere else than a purely historian journal. So these are the things. And it's thought Einstein was rejected a number of times, so it doesn't... A couple of my own examples. These are old ones. I really didn't have time yesterday evening because I have to do that editorial to pick up some more modern examples. This is, for example, the one of my paper that was rejected. The referee says that this is not really the type of article that presents the focus of this journal. And then editors say, yes, that's actually true. This is not really something that we should published in our journal, and also that we were lacking a model, which is something that I really don't understand why we should have a model in the first place, because we don't do that in our discipline. But anyway, it was rejected. This is from some really old my own referee report. And usually in my reports, I try to put really something positive into the end. Again, to give the people a feedback, there is always a possibility to get this paper published somewhere else. And as editors, if we reject from the papers that I have been editing, if the paper has any merit, that I can see that this is something that really should be published, but it just doesn't fit to our journal, then I try to figure out what would be a more suitable journal for this particular article. Of course, I don't use that much time for that, because it's not really my position of doing it. But anyhow, that's kind of a part of the deal of helping the research community to develop. This is again one of articles I made many years ago. It's one of the most cited ones actually nowadays. But this, I really like this review report. Just read it carefully. I really like what you have done, but would like to have more depth to the discussion of methods, data, analysis, results, and discussion. I would like to see real qualitative analysis and have processes and results explained in greater detail. I would like to see a page to add it for each of these. So that means that we had to rewrite the whole thing. But look how nicely this is put. This is really interesting thing, but you have to do it again. This is rubbish. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but
so what we did, we put more in depth to the introduction, to the analysis, and to the conclusions. Basically, rewrote the whole thing, and then it was published. And even this reviewer, he or she was really liked the revisions that we made in the end. Okay. Any questions about the referee processes or the process of publishing at this point?
Yeah, this is specific to my
current article, it happened that I received comments, like written as comments to my Word file, the manuscript I had submitted, and the name of the referee was like visible to me, like it showed in the comment bubbles there, and the comments were not so bad, so I wasn't insulted or anything, so like I had no worries that I would show my hatred or anything. But my supervisor said that this might be a problem and that I should ask from the editors that, is it a problem that I now know his name or her name? But anyway, the referee's name. I haven't done it yet because I just received the comments, but is it a problem and should address it?
Yeah. Did you get that that report from the editor?
Yes.
Yeah, then it's no problem. It's actually the editor had made a mistake, because the editor shouldn't send this kind of a file to you. And this is again really, really annoying, because this happens time and again that some of the reviewers, really even top ranked scholars who should know, then they send me a paper copy where they have made their comments on. I can't send that back to the authors. Then I have to write myself the report from those comments, and that's kind of a wasting editor's time, but that happens. But it's not your problem anymore, because you got it from the editor. And it's... During the past 1 year, I have had two of these cases. Before that, for years, I didn't have one. Now, for some reason, and in both cases, the reviewers were really top scholars who should have known.
Okay, just a quick side note. I've also had an experience of a review process where the names were announced. The names of the reviewers, and it was a journal that explicitly told us, the writers, that they are trying out this new thing, that they are not doing a blind review, and that they have found it so far to improve the quality or at least the niceness of the of the reviews, because the reviewers also had to, you know, come out with their own names, that this is what I'm saying about your paper. And I'm not saying that it should be a common practice, but it was an interesting experience and a positive one.
Yes, and that's actually a good point, because there has been a discussion in academia that whether we should actually skip the double blind and what then will happen. At this stage, the journals are not really eager to go to that direction. But then we have different examples, like Academia Finland. They didn't give the name of the reviewers before who are applying money from Academia Finland, but nowadays they do, because they think that that's much more fair to both parties, and even the people who are reviewing the academy projects would like to do that. Most of the publishing houses, when you submit a book proposal, they have this. Many of the publishing houses, even the really top international ones, they give the names of the referees, even to the person. So the double blind is not necessarily as blind as it kind of. So it's so in that sense, again, I wouldn't see that as a really a problem. It's still a referee. It's a refereed article, but it's not that way double blind, but you can still put it to the Tutka as a refereed article. it has got the referee reports. I'm not talking about here about the books and the referee processes in books in detail, but in books this is it's totally different in many, and it really depends on publishing house how the referee process in book cases is done, whether it's monograph or edited volume. In some publishing houses, you send the whole manuscript, and then the referee makes a report from the whole manuscript as a kind of total, which is more near to the journal article format. You have a one or two you, in many cases, you only have one because it's such a big deal to review from whole book. I have done a lot of reviews for a kind of this whole book format, which is kind of a nice, but it takes a lot of time. But then you really get the possibility to read books in beforehand, and in that sense it's okay. But then there are even quite a lot of big publishing houses where the referee process in the cases of books are done in a completely different way. The referee is done in a process when you are submitting the proposal for the book to the publisher. So the referees don't necessarily ever see the whole book at all. They see an example article or two, and then they see the proposal and the description of what is the content of each article. For example, Routledge has this type of a refereeing. And I think we have a problem whether this is really a referee at all. But I don't know. Last time we submitted last spring a book proposal to Routledge, where they had this pro system, so we had a introduction or something else ready, and then really extensive book proposal with a description from every articles. And the cool thing was that we got I think 5 referees, and that was really efficient. We got the reports in a month or so. In that sense, it really was really helpful for us to develop the book process in the end. So that in that sense it worked, but it was not really a similar kind of a referee as we usually get from journals. So just to show you that there are different kinds of ways of doing these reviews. Double blind or visible ones. And if I it was double blind in the, not really double blind in the book case, because in a book case, especially in these book proposals, you always know who are the authors of the book in any way. Okay, but let's go to kind of a nice end of looking at what are the possibilities, what are the journals, and do these impact factors make any sense in our fields? You had all done your choice of journals and you wrote that in a Moodle, and that means that there are journals available for all of you. You have found them, at least 3. Most probably there are much more than 3 in each of your disciplines, isn't it? So let's take a 5 minutes or so, and again, going back to those journals that you selected, and discuss how this to be important in your field is actually defined. That which is not necessarily an impact factor or some number there. Or do you have some kind of a general feeling that what are the important journals in your field and what are not? And also discuss that whether you have discussed with your supervisor about the journals that you chose in this exercise. Okay, these 2 things, have a 5 minutes, then we continue. Okay, just take somebody from nearby you and start to discuss. Okay, sorry to disturb your good conversation, but as we have only 15 minutes to go, we probably have to turn to back to here. So about these questions, does anyone want to tell what you discussed in your group? Anyone? All right, just give this to someone.
No, let's stay, no, because that's very important.
I always have a floor. So yeah.
Well, I just discussed with my friend, and she revealed that she has approached those top-ranking journalists like me, but actually those editors she knew from different sources, they usually tell her that please be specific and use very simple language, do not develop a theory, something like that. All such simplistic things. And I revealed to her that, yes, I'm looking for some top-ranking journals because I'm working on language policy planning issues, because policy area is one of the lacking area in applied language studies and research after 1960s. So there are important factors. But luckily, I knew that those two targeted research journals that I was looking for, I knew their editors personally because I wrote them emails before, you know, joining this research. Mm. So they were, and I'm also using one of the theory which is basically related to one of the editor. So luckily, maybe I will be blessed by the editor, hopefully. But here I want to contribute one of the political game within the research production industry, that is Trisonorous Rex. It's the terminology used by one of the leading scholar that he said that the countries like us, those who are non-native speakers, they produce a lot of research, but it is taken away as a credit by the native speaker countries in terms of, you know, having the publishing journals in their country. Again, you have an issue with the language, linguistic or language issues, then again, they recommend you to please go back to some better, you know, proofreaders or proofreading companies, because it's another big business.
Yes. Yes.
So I would say that we need to be strong enough to defend our case very well, not, submitting ourselves to the desires by these editors and reviewers. That's it.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that was a really, really good point, because this is also, we, for example, know that there are some countries that are not producing as much to research to international audience when compared to a number of universities, for example, in those journals, in those countries. We once made an analysis on one specific field and found out that, for example, there was not so many studies published from Germany, even though we knew that there's a huge amount of researchers in Germany, but they are publishing in Germany, in German, for a German audience. So they are always of this kind of... So it's not necessarily helpful for the whole community. But then the first point that you made, that you knew the editors. Of course, editors are part of the research community. And we knew people, we know people. I tend to get papers from people that I know who might be my friends. Which is another tricky point for editor, because sometimes you have to say reject to your friend and be a friend even after. So that happens all the time. And so I can't really to make a decision on personal reasons as an editor. And that's also a part of the deal. But then it also, of course, helps, because then at least I know who the person is, and... because he or she is my friend, he or she is probably a good scholar. I don't pick my friends on basis of whether they are good or bad scholars, but nevertheless, it's a part of the process that we are there in the same side in the end. But you are absolutely right that this lingua franca that happens to be English at the moment is kind of something that. It's a bit annoying for all of us who are not playing on the same rules or on the same game in that way, that sense. But let me just show you some issues here. When you did your analysis on the journals, I asked you also to check the impact factor, which is something that is nowadays discussed quite a lot in the research community and all kind of research assessments, and even universities are assessed whether our research is having an impact. But what? So There are a number of journals there in the world. Only in the Web of Science, that doesn't necessarily take very much into account most of the fields in the social sciences and humanities. There are at least 12,000 journals there. Most of them are in the natural sciences, but still. And the real number of journals is at least twice as that much. So there are possibilities to publish our papers. In September 3, there was altogether 5.45 million articles published in the Web of Science and 1.26 million in social sciences alone. So this is a huge field, research industry. And as said, in humanities and social sciences, depending on the field, it's roughly from 10 to 30% of papers that are published in the journals that are in the Web of Science. So what is Web of Science? Web of Science is a brand of a Thomson Reuters company. So it is a system that includes, with a certain criteria, journal into the system. The journal might be published whatever publishing house. So publishing house is not here the importance. The journal can apply the status of being in Web of Science. It might have the status, it might have not the status. If you were clever in the 1990s, it was really easy to get to Web of Science. Today it's really hard to get into Web of Science. Knowing that, because been a couple of process of applying journals to Web of Science. But nevertheless, when you are in Web of Science only counts on the journals that are in their system. Okay? They are counting the journals who are citing to other journal in the Web of Science system and making impact factors based on that. But as there are so many journals outside, they don't take everything included. And even more problematic, this is for arts and humanities, that Web of Science has a number of arts and humanities journals, but they don't count citation impacts for arts and humanities because the number of journals is so low. But that's really easy to count yourself. So this is how the impact factors are counted, if you want to know. It's, for example, here we have an impact factor for Nature. This is a journal with some repute. The impact factor is counted for previous 2 years, so that you have citations in 1 year added with citations in other year. Then this is divided with the total number of articles. In this case, we have this amount of citations together, this number of articles, and then we get this incredible impact factor of 41. Which is out from the space from our perspective, because if our arts and humanities impact factor is roughly one, then it's okay, really. There are some journals that might have 5 or even 10. Did you anyone has had an impact factor of 10 over 5? No, in communications there are some. But usually it's roughly 1 to 5 or even below 1. So my point here is, doesn't matter. In social sciences and humanities, impact factor doesn't matter really. And also one thing that I try to tell my friends in natural sciences and time and again, if your journal has a high impact factor, it's probably mainstream. Because mainstream papers get mainstream citations, and then you get a lot of impact, both for yourself and to the journal. So this is a journal impact factor, then the personal impact factor is a little bit different. And also the field weight is not taken into the account. For example, in economics, there are 344 journals in Web of Science. So they have absolute volume. So probably there are 344 journals citing to each other. And that will, of course, create impact factor. But for example, in economic history, there are 13 journals. So they get a lot of less impact. Volume might differ. In certain journals in physics and chemistry, they publish 5,000 articles per year. Of course, they create impact. So be careful with that. So we have other metrics. You might look at these. I will put these slides to the Moodle, because this is, I think, it's quite nice. This is a Spanish system. I don't know if it works here. It does. So journal scholar metrics using Google Scholar, and from here you can find all kind of journals. For example, here sociology, and you get the impact from Google Scholar. That is much better from our perspective. So this is something you might check. Then we have a publishing forum, Julkaisufoorumi. There's a lot of discussion whether this is good or bad, but I think it's much better than these Web of Science-based impact factors, even though it correlates with those, but still. So, but anyhow, there is a point here in these impacts. Not necessarily the impact factor or journal, but the impacts of yourself. So it's the whole issue is not only to get published your papers. That is not the point, that you get your paper published from the research community point of view, which is the most important point of view. Even more important is that somebody is interested about your research and reads it so carefully that the other researcher is actually citing it, even saying that I disagree or I agree, or usually these citations are totally neutral. We also made an analysis on that one in one paper, showing that they are really critical ones, really positive ones are really rare. It's more like this person also said something about this, and that's it. But nevertheless, it means that somebody's, because that's what is the research is all about. It's about discussion, about creating the research through the discussion. And that's also the relevance issue, that you also are part of this eternal discussion chain that is going on there in research, in all fields. Historians tend to say that we don't have this. Yes, we have. It's part also for historians, this relevant discussion with the previous research. And you are part of that chain. And as we are from arts and humanities, for us, this is a chain that will go forever. We are not only counting citations from the past 2 years. On average, an article, history article or business history article, gets first citation after 14 years. After 14 years. So it doesn't make sense of accounting for citation impacts from past 2 years. So whatever you have published, it will be there forever. Somebody might find it next week. Somebody might find it next year. Somebody might find it after 100 years. I would rather be noticed after 100 years than noticed today in Twitter. Nobody reads Twitter feeds after 100 years. But my articles published in the decent journal will be, I hope, will be read after 100 years. So this is a serious business. This is not social media. No blaming social media, but I think it's getting out of hands a little bit. Even though these are simplified citation metrics are misleading, they don't get all of our publications. Google Scholar can be really easily manipulated, and unfortunately there are people among us who are manipulating it, which is really annoying, because this one is still so much better because it takes all the texts, even the master thesis into account, which is, I think, really good thing. So, What have we learned? I don't know if you learned anything. I learned a lot. There was a really good discussions, really good questions, something that we have to take into account in the next time. For example, the language corrections about these say articles in the different languages, language politics as a kind of a really important background figure in this whole. These are important issues. This is something that we really, really need to discuss also at the faculty level.
Actually, I have a question. You have mentioned just now that this impact factor is not so important as the real scientific discussion, but what's about the dissertation? When we submit dissertation, which is article-based, does it matter? In what kind of journals we published in terms of the impact factor?
Yeah, that depends, of course, on the reviewers of your journal and your discipline. And that's something that you probably should discuss with your supervisor, because that's also something that relates to the then choosing the reviewers for your dissertation and so forth. I would say yes and no. Of course, if you have four articles published in your dissertation, all in the very best journal, in best journals in your field, of course that matters. But if your articles are published not in the best journals, but in okay journals, it doesn't harm you.
And if they are parts of the edited volume, like chapters?
Yeah, that's something that we can do in our faculty. Yeah, they are equally as good. So it's really the in the case of a dissertation, then it's more like the what is the total? That's what counts.
Okay, so the dissemination and the forms of dissemination.
Yeah,
also
and especially when you then compile your dissertation, this is something that we should actually have a totally one 2 hours about how to compile it together. It's also the how you give a rationale why you have published these articles and how they add up to your thesis as a total. Sometimes the article-based dissertation might be, as we call it, essays, that is, that are not at all related, so they are just essays from somehow from your discipline, so that's also something that happens. Yeah. But what I hope that you have learned, that it takes time, so be patient. And And also that you are part of this eternal scientific research discussions, community, and in your case, even better, you are doing the articles and you are putting them together, and they might be even part of your dissertation. So good luck, guys. Laura will probably be here next week. If not, then I will continue next week as well. Good luck with your articles. Mm-hmm.